had you ever asked the question, what is money? And what did it make you feel?
No, I definitely did not. So, you know, that's certainly not
mad, right? Isn't that mad?
Yeah. Yeah. It's such a simple question, right? But it's also so profound. And yeah, I wasn't taught anything about it in any of my education, high school, college, was never anything to be discussed, work.
Who are the people adopting Bitcoin? What expertise do they possess that enables them to see value in Bitcoin? How is Bitcoin changing their lives? Welcome to Bitcoin with Jake, a podcast that focuses on people's personal journeys to Bitcoin and helps you understand the unique lens of each Bitcoiner. Before we crack on with the episode, humor me with 30 seconds so I can introduce our sponsor of the show. Orange Pill App is solving a problem that I personally felt. I am a user and really believe in the mission. Bitcoin meetups are great, but you can't control exactly who you meet and spend time with, whilst it can be hard to actually get there in the first place. Wouldn't it be much easier if there was a way to connect with Bitcoiners in your local area? Who do you walk past every day that is also experiencing the paradigm shift that is true Bitcoin adoption? Well, this is where the Orange Pill app comes in, dubbed Bitcoin Social Layer. It's an app that allows you to connect with Bitcoiners in an ultra-local sense. For additional information, check out episode number 48 to hear Mateo's journey. He's a great guy, has built and exited businesses before, and has no doubt identified a problem that many people have. Once you've signed up, please do get in touch. Now, on to today's episode.
Today, I'm speaking with Macro Jack. Jackson, how are you, mate?
Jake, I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on the show today.
No, my absolute pleasure. My attention was caught by some of your tweet threads that were not just entertaining, but seriously insightful. So I'm very excited to have you on today and understand what really brings you to the table. So I always begin in the same way. Where were you and what were you doing when you came across Bitcoin?
Yeah, so initially discovered Bitcoin in 2017, as seems to be very commonplace in the Bitcoin Twitter sphere. So I was actually a senior in college or university in fall of 2017 when I initially heard about Bitcoin, and was actually studying for an exam, I believe, if my memory serves me correctly. And a colleague of mine, friend of mine, had brought up Bitcoin. He was really into options trading and just kind of speculating in the financial markets, both in traditional markets and the crypto markets as well. And he, I think, brought it up to me in August of 2017. We were studying for an exam or working on something, and I didn't know too much about it, but he was pretty much like, you know, hey, this is going to keep ripping. It already went from, I think, $1,000 a coin in early 2017 to, at that point, it was about $4,000 a Bitcoin. So not knowing much, I just kind of took his word for it and purchased maybe $200, I think, of Bitcoin at the time. So I had a little skin in the game, but really, you know, no stake at all in the grand scheme of things. And I watched that $200 go up to, I think it was about $800 or so when Bitcoin peaked in 2017. And I didn't really pay much attention to it. It was something, I guess, that just felt gimmicky at the time. And I didn't really dig into it too much. And I watched that $200 go up to $800 and then come crashing down in 2018. And by that time, I graduated school in spring of 2018. So less than a year later, I moved to New York to start my career in the traditional finance markets. And it wasn't until, I would say, late 2018, so almost a year after I initially heard about Bitcoin, that I started to get a little bit more curious about it, because I had never sold that really small stake that I had. So I dug around a little bit. I read Vijay Boyapati's Bullish Case for Bitcoin was the first article that started to make things click for me. And just between, I think, moving to New York, starting a career in finance, and trying to make sense of the world and financial markets, and figuring out what is this Bitcoin thing that I own, started to click. So began to accumulate a little bit more in 2018 and 2019. And then it really wasn't until 2020 where my worldview shifted quite dramatically for, you know, reasons we could certainly talk about today. And that's really when I became more of a hardcore Bitcoiner, would be in 2020. So that's, you know, that's the short version. And then I'll take a pause there because it was a little.
Yeah, well, let's dig into it. So you mentioned you started a finance career. So first question is, you know, what were you studying in order to get into that industry? And the second part of that is, you know, what were you taught? So what were you learning to do as a skill?
Sure. So I was studying finance in my undergraduate program. It was pretty standard in terms of coursework. There was economics courses, there was corporate finance and accounting courses, There was financial market, international business. So it was kind of an all-encompassing program. It wasn't very granular into any of those subjects. And I would say I learned quite a bit about Keynesian economics. luckily, a lot of that went in one ear and out the other. In addition to that, I just started to learn a little bit more about, I guess, market structures and asset classes and, you know, what, you know, how to value different asset classes. And that was kind of the basis of how I got into starting a career in traditional finance, was just having that four-year degree. I will say that despite doing well academically in college, I did well. So, on paper, my resume was strong and I was able to work at a large financial institution in New York after graduating. I would say that I didn't really have the same fire or drive that I do now. So when I was back 21 years old, 5 years ago or so now, it was really just about getting the coursework done. You know what I mean? Like trying to do well in school, build up the resume, get a job after school, all of that. And it wasn't really until I started working. And my first job wasn't that glamorous either. It was at a very reputable company, but I was doing audit, which isn't, you know, like the sexy, like investment banking or sales and trading kind of front office financial market work. So I kind of had to build my way up. So I started an audit and then I started studying even more after I graduated and sat for an exam called the CFA. Maybe you've heard of it, the Chartered Financial Analyst. So I took that thinking that it would help me kind of propel my career in traditional finance. Because at the time, I still wasn't that far down the Bitcoin rabbit hole. I was still pretty laser focused on trying to do well in traditional markets. So I took that and then I got into hedge fund and private equity research. And then that brings me to about 2019, 2020, when, you know, the world started to get a little funky and things changed for better or for worse. And I kind of took the financial knowledge that I had. And I also started to just build on that outside and got really curious about like what's going on in the world. How is this impacting financial markets? And one podcast that really stuck out to me early in my career would be the Macro Voices podcast. And that was like, you know, still I was really into traditional finance at the time, but I was hearing a lot of these unconventional views in traditional markets. And that kind of helped me to get more curious. And actually Eric Townsend, the host of that show, was also very ahead of, I would say, all the coronavirus stuff in early 2020. Like he was pretty much kind of sounding the alarm. And I was like, huh, this is kind of wild. And then I was in my office in New York and people were like really acting like this wasn't going to be a big deal. I personally think it was overblown, but it still had an influence in financial markets and economies. And it almost seemed like even a week or two before the world shut down, no one was anticipating that. So yeah, I studied finance, worked in a couple of different roles so far in the markets. And it's been a mix, I guess, of my education and my curiosity to learn more and understand what's going on behind the scenes.
And that's always the best blend though, Jackson, is you need some, let's say, passion, some fire in the belly for whatever it is that you're looking into and to find, you know, to resonate with your work. Otherwise, you know, nothing of interest really gets achieved. But it was a wild time, right? That 2020 period, like what the hell was happening? And going through it, like even thinking back to it, you're like, I almost can't believe it actually happened. But what I like to try and to eke out, shall we say, so on your Twitter profile, you'll say former Wall Street. And that to me means that you have an industry insight that many other people don't have. And so how does that translate into how you view Bitcoin?
Sure. So it played a pretty big role in me becoming, I would say, you know, a Bitcoiner, right? And actually having a high amount of conviction in Bitcoin, not only for the asset purposes or investment purposes, but for the kind of revolutionary aspect of it, right? Like how sound money could change the world. And I would say that working in New York at the time in 2019 and 2020, before the world shut down, I had just transitioned into a new role doing hedge fund and private equity research. So I had gotten a job that I was more thrilled about from my first job out of school. And you know, I felt like I was making the right steps in my career and was actually starting to get more interested in what I was doing on a day-to-day basis. But to answer your question, it was kind of a matter of working in this of traditional markets on Wall Street and seeing everything kind of unfold with COVID. And I had moved out of New York temporarily just because the city had completely shut down. So I moved back with my parents that are in the Northeast of the United States. And it wasn't until then where I kind of had a lot of time to myself to, you know, be out of that bubble of New York where everyone I knew was largely working in finance and kind of had like the same worldview and thought about things the same way. And I was able to get exposed to different viewpoints and, like I said, kind of being on FinTwit and getting different ideas. And things started to click for me where I was like, all right, I'm working in private equity, hedge fund research, and we're benefiting quite a bit from the initial liquidity that was added to markets, right, in April of 2020. And I started to get a little bit disillusioned at that point because I was very frustrated to see back where I was living with my parents at the time, it's quite strict in terms of what was open and, you know, what you could do. And a lot of small businesses were hurting quite bad. Their businesses were forced to be closed. I mean, they weren't really getting the same favorable treatment that larger corporations were getting. So while I was, I guess, doing well, my company was doing well and financial markets were doing well, I was a bit frustrated because it was completely disconnected from the reality of the situation where the United States and really the entire globe was shut down due to political intervention and just kind of hysteria. And even though the economy is kind of grinded to a halt because they were in a way forced to, financial markets were just ripping because of all the liquidity that was pumped in by central banks around the world. And that was very frustrating for me to see. I remember a lot of both at my job and just outside of my job about the K-shaped recovery. You probably remember that term where, you know, financial assets and really any type of asset, real estate, were all doing phenomenally well in 2020 because of the zero interest rate policy and all the liquidity added. But most people are getting crushed. Their revenues were grinding to a halt because they couldn't do business. They had to like work around all these different regulations and rules that the government imposed upon them. And now it's even worse too, because there's all this inflation now as well from that monetary and fiscal policy. And those same people who got crushed in 2020 because of business closures are now struggling with their cost of living because of all the inflation that we're currently living through. So it was kind of an eye opener for me because I was working in an industry that was benefiting from this because Wall Street, you know, benefits from the policies, even like the ones that we're seeing recently with Silicon Valley Bank. Wall Street, of course, will benefit from that. But Main Street America, and I guess just like globally, the middle class was disadvantaged by that policy.
It's amazing, isn't it, as well, when you start to see these situations where it's like, that is your lived experience. So regardless of what your phone tells you or what the TV tells you or any of these, like what were previously to COVID in some ways, trusted sources of information, so, well, hang on, I'm seeing something completely different in physical reality. So this doesn't make sense. And that obviously trips you into start asking more questions and more questions. And it leads you down this amazing hole of seemingly clarity. And actually, you touched on earlier that whole idea of like learning Keynesian economics at university. I had a similar experience and I kind of just didn't really understand it. And I'm like, this doesn't make a lot of sense, but you kind of sit the exam anyway and you tick enough boxes to get through it and whatever. But like Austrian economics comes into your life via Bitcoin in my case. And that just suddenly, oh my God, of course, it's all about how people behave. It's got nothing to do with this reaction between interest rates and, you know, inflation and how the government can behave. So I imagine you've been on a similar process. What did it make you actually do then? So you were living back with your parents in a place that was very different to the work environment you were in. You obviously decided to make some changes as your research deepened.
Yeah, so I made a lot of changes kind of in all areas of my life. I would say that the school that I went to in the States is, for better or for worse, has a very big culture of just partying. So it's very, you know, it's normal to do that, right? And that kind of attitude and way of life is also very prevalent in New York City. So I kind of had this, you know, mentality of working hard, playing hard sort of thing, right? And as a young professional and living in New York, that was a lot of fun. A lot of people that I went to school with also had moved to New York, so I had a good group of friends. But it was actually, so we didn't even talk about this, but it was not only the COVID thing and how that kind of disillusioned me with the financial system and really the incentives of it. But also, I actually suffered a concussion on New Year's of 2019, so early January 1st, 2020. And you could imagine how that might have happened on New Year's Eve. We don't need to go into the details of that. But
big night out, a bit wrong, yeah.
Yeah. So it was a combination of that. I suffered a concussion. I needed to take a little bit of time off from work. And, you know, in a way, we talk about the Great Reset, right, of what the globalists are planning to do or currently doing. But in a way, it was almost like my Great Reset, where I was like, all right, need to kind of reassess my priorities and, you know, how I'm living. And at the time, I wasn't eating very healthy. I was definitely overindulging in alcohol. It just was not a very healthy lifestyle. So I took a break from work for about a month or so and was able to reset and Then COVID happened very shortly after. So it was like, you know, my entire world between these two events, one personally and one globally, completely shifted the way that I kind of was leading my life. And when I moved back home, I had way less distractions than living in, you know, in a huge city like New York. So I was really able to kind of keep that momentum up and reprioritize things in my life. So I started eating much healthier. I started exercising much more. Also started to read a lot more, you know, do a lot of my own research in financial markets and just got very curious. I used a lot of that downtime that I had wisely rather than just kind of going back home and, you know, continuing to live the same way that I was, or like, you know, watching Netflix or playing video games, stuff like that. So really it was, you know, all of that kind of changed me quite a bit. And then also just Bitcoin, and I would say adopting a low time preference thinking, it all just kind of made sense at once. You know what I mean? One external shock, one internal shock, plus learning about Bitcoin has just like kind of radically changed the way that I view myself, the world, and, you know, how I interact with it.
And here we are on a Bitcoin podcast, Jackson. You know, there's no way that back in 2019, I would have predicted that this would be happening right now. I did a business management degree, so not as finance heavy per se, but I often say I was taught how to make money, but I never asked the question, what is money? So as someone like yourself that's gone and done a four-year finance degree, has been focused on looking at private equity funds or other type of hedge fund investing models, you're obviously completely, you know, you've done a CFA. You are an absolute professional in that space. Had you ever asked the question, what is money? And what did it make you feel when you started going down that hole?
No, I definitely did not. So, you know, that's certainly not
mad, right? Isn't that mad?
Yeah, yeah. It's such a simple question, right? But it's also so profound. And yeah, I wasn't taught anything about it in any of my education. High school, college, was never anything to be discussed. Work, it's always just kind of something. I think growing up in the United States, where we benefited from the global reserve currency for about 100 years now, and the fiat monetary system has been, I would say, very beneficial to the world that I grew up in. I didn't grow up very wealthy. Both my parents grew up fairly poor, working class, but my parents did fairly well for themselves. And I grew up going to Catholic school, actually. I didn't go to the public school systems. And I met a lot of people along the way who were either about as well off as me, or a lot of people that were better off than me. And, you know, a lot of these people kind of benefited from, I would say, the dollar hegemony, because a lot of people's parents were in, you know, in finance or kind of on the periphery of the money printer, right? And benefited from that. It was really not on my radar at all. And it wasn't until I started to go down the Bitcoin rabbit hole very deeply in 2020, where I started to think about, from a first principles basis, what is money? And asking that question and trying to find the answer to that also led me to ask, I would say, other questions I haven't really thought too much about, or not so much questions, but more so like taking an approach from first principles thinking in other areas of my life as well. Hmm. Something I've been thinking about too is a lot more with like health and nutrition. And I would love to talk about this too, maybe in a little bit, but there's just so much fake fiat food stuff right out there. And it's similar to money, where like you don't really question anything that you're told about like food or nutrition. You're like, oh yeah, I'm going to take my school's word for like the food pyramid, or I'm going to just go to my doctor and listen to whatever they have to say. But it all comes down to proof of work and not just listening to people with their credentials. But yeah, going back to what is money, I've found it so interesting too. You know, it's like these things are not taught in any schools, and monetary history is just such a fascinating topic to learn about. And I've really enjoyed that in the past 3 years.
Let's continue down that avenue. We'll come back to food and nutrition later. What does it mean when you start asking that question, what is money? And how do you see that kind of altering things in your life over the years to come? So, I mean, to give an example, it just opens up such a huge area for discussion. And when you come to it as a CFA, like, how's it going to change the business environment? I mean, there's lots to talk about. It's a huge question. We don't have hours and hours and hours. Go and listen to Mr. Breedlove's brilliant podcast if you want that. Yeah, like, so where did that kind of take you when you started asking that question?
Yeah. And also just want to clear the air and not misrepresent anything. I did pass the first part of the CFA. I'm not a CFA charter holder for any of the listeners out there.
Yeah, because isn't it like 3 years long, the full thing?
Yeah. Okay. There's three parts. And it's pretty intensive. But yeah,
anyways, fair play. I mean, it's good to get to that phase.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's such a big topic to unpack. But I would say, kind of at a fundamental level, when we ask what is money, we start to think about, from a first principles basis, how do we, I guess, as a civilization advance, right? Like money is kind of the intermediary good for us to be able to trade with each other and divide up labor and cooperate and coordinate resources so that we could have a more prosperous future. And that's still something that we want to strive for in our modern existence. That hasn't changed from 5, 10, or 20,000 years ago. And the issue with the money today, as we're all aware, or probably most people are listening are aware, is it's been corrupted and it is centrally controlled by the central banks. And essentially everyone kind of plays this game of crowding around the money printer and trying to benefit from the creation of new monetary units. And that, I think it's almost hard to imagine what the world will look like moving away from that and hopefully to a Bitcoin standard. But you know, to start it, I think in the financial markets, it means that assets around the world are going to be demonetized because everything is essentially trying to become a money substitute at this point, like real estate, stocks, fixed income. Everyone is trying to search for investments that are essentially savings for them to escape the depreciating fiat currency, whether they understand that or not, right? Like you and I both studied some finance growing up and we kind of just took it at face value that it was like, okay, you know, we earn money and then we have to put it into investments to retire 40 years from now. But we never really understood why we had to do that. And once you start to understand that it's really just a function of holding bad money that is being manipulated to lose its purchasing power over time, that I think has consequences for the future of finance, because instead of people just working hard and then saving and then investing that into real estate or equities or timberland or, you know, whatever, right? Like they could just be able to earn that money and save it in a hard money like Bitcoin. And that will really change financial services as we know it, because so much of not only capital, not only people's money going into these asset classes, but also so much brain power that's just being spent trying to invest and beat this depreciating money that we all face. And it's kind of crazy to think about the future of finance, but I think it, you know, it's definitely going to shrink the investment management industry. I think it'll be interesting to see how wealth management, kind of financial planning, changes in the future. I think that's a pretty interesting place that I want to spend a little bit more time on, is because people will have less of a need to invest their money into different assets, but will have more of a need to manage that savings responsibly, because there's just going to be so much more responsibility in their hands rather than, you know, their mutual fund that they're investing in or their hedge fund they're investing in. So I think it will change personal finance quite a bit. But yeah, I mean, it's pretty crazy to think about how the world could be different and how financial markets could be different because of this.
I've got too many things to say. The change is going to happen. It's already happening. I mean, I'd love to give you an example just to that point you were making. I, for a decade or so, have been managing an inheritance after my father's death. And through that process, became familiar with the financial advisory business and had money deployed through different advisory companies. And I have actually now sold all of that. And I have bought Bitcoin and I sit with Bitcoin in cash. And I look at Bitcoin as the best solution to long-term store of value that's ever existed. And I'm very, very fortunate to have found out about it. And I've also been able to act on it as a personal capital allocator. A lot of financial advisors out there, they don't have any money of their own to necessarily do this with. They're managing someone else's and they've got rules and regulations around it. So they can't necessarily do this. But I've also got a wealth management business in Sydney here in Australia, who I pay 1% to, just like I would a financial advisor, to help me secure the Bitcoin I've been purchasing. Exactly the same problem you just identified I'd had, and I've found a solution for it that's generating revenue. And you're absolutely right. I think that personal finance is forever changed. You don't need a basket of different currencies and commodities and equities and bonds to, you know, beat the inflation rate. You can just buy Bitcoin. And that's kind of what I tend to talk to people about all day long, to be honest. It's like, you don't need any of that shit. You just need this one thing. And so is that an area that then someone like yourself that's had good exposure to the finance industry, would you like to set up a business in that space? Or how do you see that playing out? Are you working towards doing anything about that? Because it's definitely something that should be created and there's a demand for.
Yeah, no, it's interesting to hear that you've had that exact same experience. because I think it is something that we're going to just see play out more and more, because this demonetization process, Jesse Myers, Cretius on Twitter, he wrote a really interesting piece maybe a couple weeks ago. And I was just talking about the global store of value market, which he had estimated to be $900 trillion globally.
Yeah,
it's crazy, right? So even the bear case for Bitcoin would be probably going to like parity with the gold market or something of that size, right? Where it's like kind of a niche store of value asset. And that's still easily a 10x from here. And that's like the absolute bear case. And you and I think we both agree that there's a lot more of an impact for Bitcoin to have in the world than just become like a collectible almost, or like just like a fun store of value to have 1 or 2% of your portfolio in. So yeah, I do think for me personally, and how I'm thinking about the future of my career, it's still somewhat uncertain. I'm working in traditional finance at the moment in the alternative investment space, still not working in hedge fund and private equities, but now kind of like real assets. And it's adequately fine, right? It's a good job, but I'm really passionate about Bitcoin, and I'm trying to figure out how that will become part of my career and my life in a bigger way, hopefully this year. But it is something I've thought about. There's a lot of financial advisors out there that are very new to Bitcoin still and kind of getting like lost in this shit show of crypto and Bitcoin and Web3 and like trying to figure out what all this means in addition to doing all the other work that they have to do, right? So I think there might be a need for almost like a Bitcoin consulting firm to work directly with private wealth management businesses and help them understand what the asset is. You know, how could you incorporate this strategy? And it's quite simple too. Like it's more so just about the upfront education. Because once they understand the education upfront and why they should be buying it, it's very easy to buy. But then it also becomes a matter of securing it properly as well. So, you know, I think there's an opportunity for a business, and I haven't done much work on that outside of think about that and think that there's a need for it, because I certainly think there is. And I would also say one more thing too. The Bitcoin community kind of has a adverse reaction, in my experience, to the idea of financial advisors. They're like, oh, like, you know, what are we paying these people money to do, blah, blah, blah. And I agree in the sense that, you know, Bitcoin will demonetize other assets. So the investment management business, which is completely filled with just excess right now, may diminish to a significant amount. But I do think, as we talked about, the personal finance and helping people with estate planning and managing their keys over multi-generation periods and, you know, tax planning, all of that stuff, I think is just going to become maybe even a bigger thing on the Bitcoin standard, because you just have so much responsibility to manage these keys properly.
Well, and the main pain point that I have as someone managing an inheritance is, if I get hit by a bus in the next 30 minutes, how do I know that my digital assets go to my wife and my daughters? And if they aren't transferred to them successfully, that is a monumental fuck up of my wealth management strategy. And so that's incredibly important. And I wonder, I was thinking about how many people are out there like yourself that are down the Bitcoin rabbit hole, are keen to work in Bitcoin in some way, but not quite sure where they fit into that. Like, how many people are, I started a podcast a year ago, and I've been lucky to have a couple of job opportunities that came out of it. So I would always recommend to people to start a podcast, and something will come from that, I'm sure. But have you had to think about how you might kind of best go ahead with that?
Something I think about every day.
Really? I bet there's a lot of people that think about it every day, right? They're like, I really, really want to work in Bitcoin in some way. How do I do it?
Yeah.
Cool.
Absolutely. So as you know, I'm pretty active on Twitter now. Mm-hmm. That's something that is newer in the past year or so. So actually, back when COVID happened in 2020, a buddy and me, we had spun up like a different account, not the MacroJack account that I tweet under, but we had spun up an account to kind of talk more about traditional markets and how we were viewing it. We were just trying to get like so much information that we were consuming and kind of put our own spin on it and share with the world how we were viewing different things. And we did that a little bit in 2020, and then it just kind of fell through the cracks. And I became more and more interested in Bitcoin and wanted to spend less and less of my time focusing on traditional finance. So, you know, we're still great friends, but we just kind of, I guess, lost interest in doing that. After that, I really still had this itch to pursue like a creative outlet and trying to figure out how do I kind of separate my career and my personal well-being and my finances away from my employer. Like, how do I separate that and at least start working towards something that's a bit more independent? So in 2022, at the start of last year, I really committed to it and I took a writing class in February or March of last year. And that really helped me to kind of understand online writing. And it was specifically focused on Twitter as well. So it helped me quite a bit. And I started publishing a lot more, like tried to publish every day. And I actually got laid off in July of last year. And instead of just like getting right back into looking for another, you know, fiat job, I took the time and really went hard on the Twitter and creating content. And that's where I scaled up a lot of my following and also launched my newsletter in September or October of last year. So yeah, it's still something I think about every day. As of right now, I just have the Twitter account, which could be suspended permanently or temporarily at any point, right? So it's not really mine. The only thing that I do own right now is the newsletter on Substack, which is cool because, you know, when people subscribe, you have their email. So if my Substack was shut down tomorrow, at least I could go to another platform and still be able to communicate with my subscribers. So that's kind of what I'm working on right now. I've been thinking about doing a podcast, but it's more so just like, you know, what exactly would I want to be talking about? And sometimes it feels like that market's a bit oversaturated, although maybe it appears that way, but it's not actually. I'd love to talk to you about that maybe after we're done recording. But yeah, no, I'm thinking about it, like trying to figure out how do I take my traditional market expertise, or I wouldn't even call myself an expert, but my knowledge and my love and passion and interest in Bitcoin and sound money, and how do I make that a career? It's something I'm constantly thinking about.
I'm working on the same thing, essentially. So it's very exciting. We'll compare notes 100% and see what we can do.
Yeah.
There's lots of directions I could take this in right now, but I think just to kind of try and stay focused on what your career so far has taught you, you mentioned that you're working in alternatives in your day-to-day job at the moment. Can you talk us through what kind of assets those actually are and like how do they compare to Bitcoin? Because in my mind, there's obviously different types of investors. You know, people want to have a short-term view or a long-term view, and they want liquidity or they don't want liquidity, et cetera, et cetera. But when you're looking at the Bitcoin hurdle rate over kind of four-year epochs, how do you beat it? And what are some of these calculations that you're running in what is effectively fiat land versus Bitcoin?
Yeah, so the short answer is you don't beat it. But the more nuanced answer is you don't beat Bitcoin in the long term, and also people don't really know about Bitcoin, or they haven't paid enough attention to it, right? So I'm still in the traditional finance world where most people still kind of dismiss Bitcoin, or they just kind of group it into crypto, right? Like it's a 20% allocation in my crypto portfolio, which is 1% of my net worth, right? Like something stupid like that. So most people in the world that I'm in still don't understand Bitcoin. Like I don't think anyone at my actually, one person in my company who I'm pretty close with is also a Bitcoiner, but I don't think anyone else is. I used to tell people about Bitcoin and try to get them interested, and it was just, I'm done doing that. But in terms of
really well sometimes or really badly.
Yeah, exactly. So we actually invest in farmland. Why do people like it? I would say it's a great diversifier in a traditional portfolio. So farmland historically is very uncorrelated with equities and fixed income. So people are, you know, increasingly looking for alternatives in their portfolio. The 60-40 portfolio is kind of over. I think that died in 2021. So people are looking for alts, and farmland is a great portfolio diversifier. It also has a positive correlation to inflation, which was very topical, and people are looking to hedge inflation. So, you know, you get commodity exposure and also exposure to the land, both which could serve as potential inflation hedges. Mm. A lot of people like it for ESG and impact investing, which I think is kind of bullshit. I am an environmentalist, I would say, and I care deeply about the planet, and I love nature, I love animals. And as a consumer, I'm very conscious of, like, for instance, grass-fed, grass-finished beef, like, you know, I like to support local farms that are doing things the right way. But so there's people who are interested in ESG, either because they have to do it, like there's some sort of mandate at wherever they're allocating capital that they have to screen for ESG, or you know, there's a lot of people that just think that like ESG is the right thing to do too. So that's also of interest. And, you know, typically in terms of underwriting these, these returns aren't out of the park or anything. It's farmland. It's a very stable and reliable asset class historically. And it also does very well countercyclically. So people have been interested in it because historically, like in, let's say, in the dot-com bubble, in the great financial crisis in 2008, in the more recent COVID crisis, farmland has been like a pretty consistent performer, even though like in the real estate market crash in 2008 and equities crash, like Farmland came out like maybe 20 or 30% up. So I guess that's all to say. People like it because it's different and it serves a purpose of diversification and counter cyclicality in a traditional portfolio. But most of the people I speak with, I don't think are also into Bitcoin at all, right? So they're kind of comparing it to fixed income, or they're comparing it to equities or commercial real estate. And those are most of the conversations that I have.
It's so mind-blowing, isn't it, to think that there's communities of people out there that spend all day, every day comparing the difference performance metrics for like saving money over time, essentially. So an asset class, whether that be farmland or a bond or whatever. Yet those same people are immediately 150% dismissive of Bitcoin. And as you mentioned, have 0.2% of their net wealth in it. Like, it just, it's hilarious. Like, why is that? And, you know, again, talk about Croesus, his brilliant article, Why the Yuppie Elite Dismiss Bitcoin, like really hits the nail on the head. I've got a ton of mates or family members that kind of fall into that bracket of like highly educated, very intelligent, kicking goals in all areas of life, but completely and utterly dismissive of Bitcoin. And it's interesting, and in lies the opportunity in so many ways. If you start digging around and having a look and you go, well, hang on, you know, Jackson's telling me that you cannot beat Bitcoin. And there's all these other people that would like to beat Bitcoin if they even knew about it, but they haven't yet found out about it. And therefore, I can buy some and I can make a pretty good bet that it's going to do well. You know, it's absolutely amazing what we seem to have found ourselves in the knowledge of. What I'd like to do, though, is get back to something you touched on at the start, Jackson, which is nutrition. So you just mentioned you'd like to support grass-fed beef, et cetera, and it's an area of your life that's altered. There's no doubt that when you start digging into that question, what is money, you realize that it's not just the money that's been tampered with, shall we say. It's pretty much every area of your life. The information you consume, the food that you eat, the energy that's been pushed at you, you name it, right? There's some corruptible element to it somewhere, which has been used as a lever for someone else's personal gain, largely because they have access to the money printer and you don't. So what's changed in your nutritional kind of view on life? And teach me about that.
So there's so much to unpack there. I would say maybe first is something I actually wrote about very recently on my newsletter, was the idea of generational wealth and generational health. So, you know, assuming that Bitcoin does what we think it will do over the coming decades or centuries, and, you know, and trying to accumulate as much of it as possible and also secure it properly. So, you know, our children and our children's children, and, you know, we just pass it down as long as we can. In order to actually have the best chance of doing that, you need to be able to actually be very healthy, right? And do everything that you can to be around, to enjoy your wealth and to pass it on properly and be able to enjoy kind of those family and friends that in that leisure time that maybe being wealthy in the future would bring. So I think about this very fundamentally. It's like having money is important because it gives you optionality in life and you're able to do the things that you want to do and you're able to be financially free and, you know, not like a slave to your employer or the government or something. But even more important is your health. Like if I woke up tomorrow and I was terminally ill and I had a month to live, I wouldn't care how much Bitcoin I had. I guess I would make the most of it, but it would be pretty devastating to me to be 26 and to be told I only have 1 month to live. So at a very fundamental level, health is kind of that base layer, right? Before even thinking about Bitcoin and what it could potentially do for my future and my future family and their future, I need to make sure that I'm doing everything that I can, be a healthy individual and, you know, have longevity. And it's so funny because like when people in the fiat world maybe think about health, it's like, okay, well then I need to like be eating a salad every day and I need to be eating Oatly milk and all these like fake consumer products, right? That are just like artificially industrial processed food and sludge. But it's actually quite enjoyable to be healthy. Like to me, it's really just about eating whole foods. So, you know, just trying to eat meat or eggs or a vegetable, a fruit, like just trying to buy one ingredient foods, like true foods. I think also supporting people as close to the farm as possible. So either going directly to the farm or going to a farmer's market is a great way to source your food because you're getting the highest quality. You're also supporting the people who are producing it. And you can, you know, ask them questions if you're curious to know like how they're raising their animals or how they're, you know, growing their crops. They're more than happy to share that information with you. And It also is just about working out and doing something that you enjoy to do working out. It's not supposed to be like something torturous to you. So I personally like to run. I'm here in Austin, so I like to run along the river. I like to do some calisthenics, you know, like push-ups, sit-ups, stretching, all that kind of stuff. And getting a lot of sunshine, getting a lot of steps every day. So you got to make it very enjoyable. That's kind of how I think about it, is all at the beginning, it starts with health. You know, some things are out of your hands, right? Like, I don't know, I could get hit by a bus tomorrow. That's a possibility, but I can't really control that. If I'm looking down the street to make sure a bus isn't coming and somehow I still get hit by one, then, you know, I did what I could to avoid that outcome, but it happened anyway. But what I can do is just make sure that I'm eating very healthy. I'm consistently exercising, spending time with people that I love. I think, you know, relationships are very important for health as well. It's really evolved over the past couple of years. Like I told you earlier, was not that healthy of an individual. Like in college, I was drinking very excessively. I was eating like just very shittily pretty much all the time, like going out to eat all the time, eating crappy food. So yeah, that's definitely changed a lot. And also with the Bitcoin journey that I've been on myself, I've learned a lot about the history of food and nutrition, which we can touch on that too. But as you would imagine, and as you probably know, just as the money's corrupted, that's also corrupted the food industry. And there's just a lot of, I would say, misinformation and just kind of like clown world out there in the food industry.
It kind of takes the same strategy in some way. So like once you've asked that question, what is money? And you start looking at how the monetary system actually functions and how that may or may not benefit you, then you use the same thought process to go through, hang on, well, what should I eat? And it kind of takes you to the same place in some ways. It's crazy, isn't it? I mean, these are such simple things. Like if you're not healthy, you can't enjoy your wealth. Oh, it seems simple, but is so on point. Go on, please.
I was just going to say too, I think we fundamentally as a society or as a world during the fiat era. So let's definitely say since 1971, people have been so focused on one area of their wealth, which would be financial wealth, right? Like people are just kind of like, oh, I have this big number on my screen. I'm doing so well financially because I have all these assets in my brokerage account and my retirement accounts. But then you look at them and they're just like 50 pounds overweight. You know, they never exercise. They're just sitting at their desk all day under fluorescent lighting and just like a very unhealthy way to live. And I'm not shaming that person because by one, I'm not like, you know, not a bodybuilder. I'm not like in the top 1% of health, but I'm doing pretty well for myself. And also I was there myself not too long ago. So I almost feel bad for these people because they're not going to first principles and they're not taking a broad enough thought process about how to think about health. And the fiat world is just distorted so much. And thinking about our finances is no different and our wealth is no different. People just tend to ignore their physical or mental health and chase money and finances as much as possible without even understanding what money is too.
I don't want to be a judgmental person, but I see sickness everywhere. And you're like, I can tell from just looking at you that you're sick. You may not think that you are, and you may say that you feel fine, but in some ways I know you're not as, you know, you won't feel great if you were to feel, you know, how, if you weren't to get into shape, for example. And that's a tricky place to get in some ways. You never want to like judge your book by its cover, so to speak, but you can just tell like you're sick. Yeah. Anyway, before I start a rant on that, so it's a nice segue to, so you've written an article called The Fiat Cave on your Substack. So anyone listening, go check it out. And it's a really, really nice analogy for what life is basically like as you decide to head down the Bitcoin rabbit hole. So for those out there that haven't read it, can you give us a short summary as to like the genesis for that article and what the content is?
So remember I was speaking earlier about how I was in that stage for a while where I wanted to explore a creative outlet and I wasn't doing so. And I was trying to figure out how to do that and everything. So it was actually probably about 2 years ago now where I was talking to one of my good friends from college, who's also a Bitcoiner. And we were just talking about the Bitcoin rabbit hole and, you know, where it's taken us recently and what we've been enjoying. And it's actually him who said something about, are we going down the Bitcoin rabbit hole or are we exiting the fiat cave or are we exiting Plato's cave? And that was something that stuck with me. Eventually, in October of this year, I decided to write a series called The Fiat Cave, an Allegory of Monetary Deception, to kind of explore that idea. And at a very high level, it's kind of flipping that Bitcoin rabbit hole idea on its head. And just another parallel or another analogy to think about, how does money and Bitcoin change our way with interacting with the world? So it's kind of like that process of understanding the corruption of money, understanding sound money and Bitcoin. And that entire process is exiting the fiat cave, because for those unfamiliar, Plato's allegory of the cave discusses how there are prisoners in a cave. They're in there since birth. So they grew up in this cave and their bodies are chained against a wall in such a way where all they can do is see in front of them. And behind them, there are, I refer to them as jailers. I don't know how they were referred to. I forget. But they are walking behind a fire with objects in their hands and projecting the objects onto the wall of the cave. So these shadows are projecting onto the wall in front of the prisoners. And these prisoners, they don't know that they're prisoners, right? And they're just kind of watching the shadows on the wall. And that's their reality. That's what they think that life is. But then one day, one of the prisoners escapes and he sees kind of the world as it truly is. He's in the world, just kind of like looking at the sun and, you know, nature, the animals, the water, and couldn't believe that entire time he was actually a prisoner in this cave. So he goes back to tell the other people, and the other prisoners are just pretty much like, what are you talking about? You're crazy. Like, I don't believe you, sort of thing. And all of those other prisoners, they just stay there in the cave for the rest of the story. They never leave. So I feel like it's just such an apt way to view Bitcoin. And it's the same thing as going down the Bitcoin rabbit hole. You're exiting the fiat cave. You're understanding how central bank monopoly money is creating this false reality for us. The way I think about it is, we're all kind of prisoners of the monetary system. We're all in that cave. We're shackled up by taxation, inflation, debt, and the fiat jailers, as I refer to them, the government and the central banks and corporations. They're projecting all these things onto the wall of the cave, like in the US, the donkeys and the elephants, the two-party system, to get people all riled up and tell them the issues that you're experiencing in your life are because of the other people, like your neighbors. And it's just crazy to think about how it really just comes back to the money. And the money is just flowing to politicians and bankers and large corporations. And that is really just distorting our reality. And it's kind of keeping us prisoners of the monetary system. And once you understand that fundamentally, that it all comes back to the money and the monetary corruption, and you kind of understand Bitcoin, then you can kind of free yourself from that thinking. And you almost escape that two-party system thinking, and you escape the kind of all the propaganda that they want you to buy into, because you just see that you were just a prisoner that entire time.
It's a brilliant way of thinking through it. And it's really fun, actually. Often in Bitcoin, I come across someone like yourself that's just thought about it in a different way to other people and conveyed it in such a way that it's really easy to understand. So I really enjoyed it myself, and it really makes me think differently about, wow, maybe that is the situation I was in. What the hell? And I feel like I've traveled and changed as a person, and now I have my wealth secured in a completely different way. And people largely say I'm completely fucking mad. But actually, it's the most peaceful I've ever been in 10 years of trying to figure out how to look after this stuff I was given. And it's funny as well how, you know, old mate comes back to the cave. He's like, guys, I've found a much nicer place to live. You want to come check it out? Conspiracy theorist. You know, that phrase is thrown around so much in the last couple of years. And it's very apt, isn't it? Like, that's so true. People just don't want to hear a different narrative sometimes. And it can be about a number of different subjects, whether it's like what you should eat or what actually happened with the coronavirus, or, you know, you name it. Like, oh, by the way, the latest bailout in America is not going to have any burden on the taxpayer, quote unquote, from the government. It's like, you obviously don't think about what it means to issue more debt or look into what the nefarious nature of inflation actually is, because it's, you wouldn't agree to this kind of propaganda, as you mentioned, being thrown at you. It's really, really interesting. People should go check it out, basically. Where I just lastly want to ask Jackson before we finish up is, so you're based in Austin, which is not where you grew up, and is a bit of a mecca for Bitcoiners. So talk me through why you decided to move there, or how you managed to move there, and what life's like.
I moved out of New York in January of 2022, so a little over a year ago now. My girlfriend and my fiance now, but my girlfriend at the time, and I, we traveled quite a bit.
Congratulations.
Thank you, man. Yeah, we traveled quite a bit last year because both of our jobs are remote. So we're both from the northeast part of the country of the U.S. And we traveled out west for a good part of last year. And we went to Colorado, Arizona, California, Texas. And we both really like Austin. Love the warm weather. Love good people here. It's great for me being into Bitcoin because there's an event easily every week. It's pretty crazy how many events there are. I can't even make it to all of them. But we are actually not really here permanently. We'll likely settle down probably closer to family. But in the meantime, it's a great place to enjoy being able to work remotely, enjoy the warm weather. Like it's March right now and went for a good swim over the weekend, which certainly wouldn't be doing if we were back home. So it's been a lot of fun. And I've met really cool people. Anyone who hasn't been to Austin and is into Bitcoin needs to check it out at some point because you meet so many cool people and then you're just kind of walking around town and you run into people that you've met at like at the Austin Bitcoin Club or at one of the adjacent meetups that are smaller. And it really is cool, man. The energy here is great. It's all freedom loving people. And yeah, Texas is a really great state. Hopefully sometime in the future, I'll be able to call it home.
Awesome. It's definitely a place on the to-do list for me. Well, Jackson, last question is where can people reach out and get in touch if they want to?
Yeah, Twitter is the easiest. It's just MacroJack21. And I have everything linked in my bio there. Yeah, my Substack is fiatcave.substack.com. So yeah, reach out, DM me if you want to get in touch, have any questions that maybe I didn't answer that well on the podcast or any other comments. Yeah, feel free to get in touch with me.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time today, Jackson.
Thanks, Jake.
Okay, friends, nice work. You made it all the way to the end of the episode. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to this conversation. As I said at the start, if you have any questions, then please don't hesitate to reach out. And if you enjoyed the episode, then please rate, like, subscribe, and share. That's it for now. Enjoy the rest of your day. All the best, Jake.